All right, well, welcome. I don't want to postpone this any further. I know it's the last meeting of the year, and after hearing you all talk and conversations, you come in, I got to be honest with you. It's I don't know what your E room is like other than this, but it's nice seeing you all talk to each other and interact. It's a lot more of a lively meeting than the Zoom meeting. I'm not going to press you one way or the other when the organizational meeting comes up, but I do want to welcome you all to the last meeting of the academic year. This meeting is going to proceed with the regular general meeting, and this can be followed by the organizational meeting. I'm going to try to be mindful of everybody's time because we have two components to this, to try to wrap up the first part as quick as we possibly can. So on that note, we're going to go ahead and call the meeting to order and go ahead and take attendance. As always, looks like everybody brought computers with them. A vote is going out. Make sure that you are logged into your EKU account. Oftentimes people have other accounts that they're logged into unknowingly, and you will not receive the notification if it comes to your email. We'll go ahead and give a couple minutes for that to go out and for everybody to respond. And judging from the sound of it, it sounds like some people are double, triple, quadruple authenticating to get into the system. Last year, it happened. It was like the very first thing in the organization.
Yeah, up. There's not really missed a new blush.
I'm still getting into the right account.
I know, I can hear it.
Between the right accounts and the double authentication, we'll give a couple more minutes. Who knew the hardest thing that you had to do today was just mark your attendance in your faculty senate meeting?
Are the new people getting to the attendance?
Not yet. You're actually not on the official roster until after the organizational meeting, and then that roster gets updated, and you'll get the lovely responsibility of doing all the hoop jumping that you see everybody else frantically trying to do next year. This reminds me back in the day where I just want to send out a piece of paper and everybody sign it. Yeah. Assigned seats. We can just look around.
We're at 37.
Like I could see people like not here, not here. Okay.
So we've got a little.
What we'll do is we'll go ahead and leave that open for everybody to mark their attendance. We'll go ahead and move to approve the minutes for the April meeting. Do I hear a motion to approve the Faculty Senate minutes for April 6th? Do I hear a second? That was moved by Senator Nockaway. Second by Senator Humphrey. Any discussion? All right, and a vote will go out to approve the minutes for the April 6th meeting. So glad you break that down. I would forget every time. Whoops. Yeah, somewhere right there. Yeah. Yeah.
Probably the same.
Yeah.
New ones.
Mine aren't showing.
You're artish.
The minutes aren't showing.
I'll have to check that one.
I've got December, February, November, October, and September.
If you
May, I emailed everyone the should be in an attachment and email.
It's approved.
Okay, so that motion approved. So with that out of the way, I do want to take this time and thank the president's office. If you all would like, there's coffee, there's snacks in the back. I can't thank the president enough for always for the first and the end of the year to supply that for us. It's always a special treat, especially given the financial currents happening. It's always appreciated when this is able to happen. So I do want to take the time to thank the president for offering that for us. And with that, I will yield the floor to you, sir.
Don't get too far. Hold on right here. So the provost has been over with us today. She's she's been out for a week or so. She'll be back later this week for commencement exercises. But part of the work that she does there is an acknowledgement for the service to the university for the faculty senate chair. I have had the good privilege to serve with many faculty senate chairs in a variety of roles. It is a challenging role to try to bridge the gap. It is a great partnership with this office. I want this group to understand that that John has been a great advocate for this body. He has been tremendously transparent and collaborative as we've worked together for the last year, and we have tried to move the institution forward day by day. And for that, John, we are grateful for that. And you take that that with you. Don't please use it with caution, because if you start convening meetings over across South Campus with it, I don't know how Derek will react, but. He's all good with it, but John, thank you so much for your service. We appreciate it. Yep. Welcome to Senator Howell as he will ascend to the role. And so we've had a chance to chat a couple of times. I'm excited to work with him in the upcoming year in this position through the president's office. I did submit a report. I apologize for it being just a tad bit late today. Lots of things going on campus, trying to keep up with all the parts and pieces. We had an exceptional giving day. Let me say a big thank you to the faculty for your support, for your continued support, the overall mission of the institution, which in large part is scholarships and the support of students and their success here at the university. And I know we'll have a chance to hear from our new student body president and Board of Regents member, and also from the executive vice president for the student affairs. So, well, congratulations to you all, by the way. You can refer to the report for some specifics about Giving Day, but it was a great day. I did provide some budget updates, so we will have a finance committee meeting on Wednesday at 9 a.m. here on campus. It'll be the second finance committee meeting where we will present the final budget for the university. Specifically, as things have kind of evolved over the last 20 days, we were able to get a full restoral of base funding to the university minus about $1 million in pension support. So while it was a cut, it was not as much as we had anticipated. We have then kind of worked through the balance of the budget. You can see the strategic investment areas that I've listed in the report, which includes the sixth consecutive year of across the board pay increases, the sixth year of fully funding step and rank for faculty positions on campus, including the foundation professor rank. It fully funds the second year of our research agenda funding. So we'll be at $500,000 of internally funded research support for the upcoming academic year. It is the second of third years of a full restoration of our deferred maintenance budget. So it's an additional $750,000 this year for a total of $1.5 million. There is an allocation for $1 million in capital acquisitions for our School of Aviation program. And then there is an additional $1 million in contingency funds added to the $2.5 million last year for a total of $3.5 million in budgeted strategic reserves. There is a laundry list of construction updates on here, just so you all kind of know what has happened, what is currently happening, and what is scheduled to happen. As we go into the summer months and into the fall of the semester, it's been a great year. We will celebrate that with commencement exercises on Thursday and Friday. For those who are participating in your colleges, for those who are volunteering in other ceremonies, For those who are committed to making this an exceptional experience for our students, let me say thank you. It is a great day to celebrate. It's a great day to celebrate your hard work. It's a great day to celebrate their hard work and their success. And so I hope you have a chance to celebrate in that way. We have a number of other activities going on campus, from the commissioning of officers through our military science program to first year graduations for first year courses to a number of other activities. So be on the lookout on EKU today. If you can come and be a participant in any of those, would welcome you to do so. With that, Mr. Chair, I think maybe the best thing for me to do is see if there are any questions that I might be able to field. I do not think there's a delegate from the provost's office, so I will field anything on her behalf as well while I'm here.
Any questions for the president today? Not a lot.
Dr. McFadden, so I attended the Lunch and Learn last Wednesday, mm-hmm. and you have given kind of a budget overview of some of the major issues going on. I believe at that point it showed that there was a gap of almost $3.7 million,
yeah.
and the reserve was kind of left open, and so some still had to come in there. I think I had asked a question about how that pain is being shared across campus, and there were no numbers attached to it at that time. But then later in the afternoon, I saw the presentation that came from academic affairs to the chairs, showing that $3 million is of that 3.7 had to be cut from academic affairs, and this was how it was all going to be done. So apparently there are numbers assigned. Can you share how, like specifically athletics and student affairs, how they're taking a hit too?
Yeah, so I think it's important in the communications from academic affairs concerning the $3 million that is not a budget cut exercise. Part of that, the majority of the strategies adopted in there, and now granted, we were working through a much larger number. But this work around our 300 credit hour work and the efficiency that comes with the management of those funds are largely driven by the strategies that are inside of there. So so independent of whatever that number was, please know that that's work that's been ongoing in academic affairs for the better part of the year as we're moving toward our 300 credit hour number. So student success is about $1 million in reductions from their budget. As we work through the rest of the campus operations, there are smaller pools of funds. Some are revenue generating that they're replacing. Their budget's not being reduced, but they're being asked to generate more revenue to support a flat budget year over year. Some areas, candidly, are seeing an increase in investment as we talk about deferred maintenance and we talk about the acquisition of assets like garbage trucks. You know, we're going to see an increase that go into some of those buckets. And so as we distribute those funds out, I think that it's, you know, I think it's also important to say, what were we able to do with those dollars and think about where we reinvest them. And so when we look at the, you know, the across the board compensation, it's about $3 million as we do the across the board and the reinvestment. We look at look at the capital reserve or the budget reserve funds, which the board has asked us to do as well. And then, of course, talked a little bit about the School of Aviation. There's a desperate need for capital in that space. You know, there's a lot more in that budget. You saw the sheet, everything from bad debt expenses to fixed and unavoidable utility. I mean, there's a lot of other things in there that make up the totality of that number. But largely, the big numbers are the efficiencies that were found in academic affairs, which, again, could have supported a budget reduction. But we're also already driving toward the efficiency of the 300 credit hour mark that we were working to, strategic reduction in student success, student affairs of $1 million in that area. And the rest is either smaller incremental reductions that are, I wouldn't say are really material. It might be a position that's vacant that's being abandoned. It might be an operating line, maybe a contract that's not going to be renewed, or it could be a revenue commitment that says to keep your budget flat, you're going to have to grow your revenue by 300,000 or 400,000 in the next year.
What is?
They're in the revenue generating. So their budget is flat with the revenue. So their subsidy is scheduled to go down.
So you see, we've been looking on the budget committee, we've been looking at athletics for 3 months. Kyle Moats came in with Dusty and was very open. They were very open and transparent. And he said that the athletic budget is essentially determined by him, Kyle, and you in terms of the target, the goal,
yeah.
which is to be in the top, I believe, a third of our conference in terms of budgets and spending. And the two of you kind of unilaterally make that decision. If we were doing some quick math, if we were just in the top half or even exactly in the middle, that would probably save $3 million right there. So why not be a little more modest in terms of the athletics? Because I understand they serve directly almost 400 students a year. They serve students in the student experience, student life. They serve as a marketing tool. They serve alumni in the community. But ultimately, that's not the reason we're here.
Yeah, I think, Senator Locke, one of the things that we have to work through in that is that it's not a spigot you turn on and off year in and year out. When you do that scholarship pledge to a student athlete, it's a 4-year commitment now. It's a 5-year commitment for eligibility. I think we have to ascertain that if we're going to sponsor 18 Division I sports, it's not as though we can say, hey, we're just going to play 2 less games. And all that, that's there's a fixed cost to being in as far as we're in. I think we would have to say, as we also look at it, remember that when we raise tuition or any other type of fee, that gets passed on to the budget on the other side that has to be managed inside of that space. I think if there's a desire to have a strategic conversation institutionally about where we compete, whether it be a Division I, Division II, Division III, NAIA, there's a conversation about sports, I think that I wasn't in the meeting that Kyle was in, but there's no doubt that the two of us have long conversations about how we structure the budget. But it's an institutional decision about the level at which we compete, the number of sports in which we compete, and no doubt that management can bring a recommendation to that forefront. And I think that in the changing landscape of college athletics, I think there are some real existential questions that need to be answered in the days ahead. I think that today was not one of those days to bring a sweeping change to that, i.e. sport sponsorship or reduction in scholarships or not fully funding. The other challenge is just the cost of doing that work, just like everything else. If you're filling up fuel in your car today, it's twice as expensive as it was a year ago. And so I think it's just trying to find those cost controls is a challenge. So one of the things that we've asked of them is if the sports resonate with the fans, will they support at a level that can allow us to continue to sponsor or not? And I think that's the journey that we have started to be on in that way. And so we are going to push hard for revenue support. And if we can't find that revenue support, there will be some hard decisions in the very near future as it relates to that. Senator Yoder.
I was just wondering, Academic Affairs went through this 3-year efficiency process. Why didn't athletics go through an efficiency process? I mean, there are constraints on cutting Academic Affairs, I believe. You got tenured faculty, you have programs you can't cut. You have all these constraints for cutting Academic Affairs, and we found $3 million. Why are we not doing that for athletics?
Well, I will tell you that we are absolutely looking for efficiencies in athletics.
It's flat.
At every turn, it is flat. You're correct. Now they are having to bring more revenue to the table to support a flat budget for next year.
Any other questions? Follow-ups?
Day.
Hi, President McFadden. Thank you for coming in person to us. One of the topics that was raised in the English department just this week was about how so many coordinator lines are being cut. And we're all looking at the work that those coordinators have done. And we're kind of panicking, honestly, because we don't know how that work is going to be distributed among the rest of us. We're assuming that's what's going to happen. We don't know. And somebody raised the issue of what they called, and I know you've heard this before, what they called administrative bloat.
Yeah.
Is there anything happening at the upper level of at that upper level of administration to reflect all of these cuts?
You know, I think that Senator Day brought up about organizational efficiency, particularly around administrative, the administration, not administrative support, right, but senior administration. You know, I think that there's a lot of questions about that. So we do have a consultant who is on campus now, who's working with the provost's office and working with my office around trying to look at organizational design that may support a flatter, leaner administrative support. You know, as we think about AI and other types of technologies, you know, there are certain functions and certain activities that that I think could be streamlined in a significant way. I think that there's a significant number of processes that we have in our own house that require a lot of human intervention to make something move from point A to point B to point C to sometimes it feels like it's always all the way to point Z to get there. And I think that there's some real questions about, are those controls making us better, or are they just making it more difficult for us to do the work? And so I think there's some questions that we're trying to answer around that. The other challenge that we have, though, is that, you know, we're also increasingly becoming a more and more regulated space. And so whether it be in tax law or whether it be in some type of compliance reporting that we're having to do to federal or state or accrediting, or whether it be in budget management or attestations of this item or this item or this item, it has become more and more specialized, and we have a lot of external regulators who are bringing more of those requirements to the table. And so the question is, at what level can it be done? Where can it be done? Is it best served to have that as a reassigned duty for a full-time faculty member to do that work? Should we have a full-time staff person who is dedicated to doing whatever that administrative function might be? I think there are real and serious conversations about how do we have a design that supports the missions and the goals of the institution. And I do think that it feels like we have to have more and more people leading in different spots, or it feels like that we've had to respond to some of these external requirements that we have at times. But we are working with a consultant on that. So I think you can look to maybe hear some changes that'll come that has some organizational design changes that will come in the days ahead. Now that will, you know, at times we have to also be willing to share. I will be very honest. We are a very siloed organization. We have the same position in many places all across this campus, by definition, doing the same thing. But if you were to go and do a job shadow, you might find out they do two completely different things in that role. And so, Senator Day, I appreciate that. And we are cognizant of trying to continue to find those efficiencies as well. And we'll have to. Yes, sir.
You mentioned a minute ago that athletics has to generate new forms of revenue in order to stay flat. Do we have a plan as a university to find like different revenue sources besides tuition and state in order so that we can stay more flat than having these dips?
Yeah, you know, I think that it is, when you think about the state appropriation for a school like us, and it represents roughly 20% of the budget, you might compare it to one of the larger institutions, and we're the third largest, so there's only two bigger than us. You know, that number drops from 20 to 2 or 20 to less than 1. And all of a sudden, it's not as though those dollars don't matter, but they matter in a different way. And so when you look at the tuition distribution amongst public institutions, the state, we're also in that bottom quartile. You know, we're in that affordable population. Though being the largest, our tuition looks more like the smallest of the group. And so then you start to say, well, what are the other revenue streams, right? I mean, in that space, you know, fundraising, we've seen a lot of success. Most donor gifts are not unrestricted, spend it wherever you want. It's typically targeted 70% towards students, restricted scholarship activities. There are some general support of the university dollars that come in. But I think that for us, the part of that research agenda that we're looking at with trying to be able to position ourselves to have more sponsored research to try to take some of that creative intellectual activity outside of the university, can we engage in some market, you know, part of that organizational design we've had over there is to say, can we have some tech transfer? Can we create some opportunities there? I think the challenge there is that the landscape on federal funding and public federal funding has changed dramatically. then we start to say, well, what activity do we have that's non-core business? What are the assets that we have that we could perhaps generate revenue off of that is not in the core of the university's work? And so we have to say then, where's our surplus? Is it a building? Is it a space? Is it a, you know, do we engage in that realm? So I think that evolution can be very challenging. To me, the core business of education for us is still going to be core for that. The question is, can we reach further and more students, particularly in out-of-state and graduate education opportunities that may include certificates that tie back into a degree? We have got to grow that pipeline of adult learners and those non-traditional learners in that pipeline for us. And so whether it is in a certificate setting, a postgraduate engagement, a work, some kind of training that we're connected in, I think we've got to lean into our strengths, because building brand new business lines require a resource to get those off the ground. And if they don't support themselves, and we have auxiliary functions sometimes that are laid out here that really struggle. I mean, housing is this much of a break even. Parking is just a break even. And that's really the only two real auxiliaries that we have on campus. If you look at everything else we do, it supports the general university mission, and we also try to do some help, whether that be the Center for the Arts or whether that be Arlington. You can pick any one of those things. But Senator Jansky, I think that finding those new and innovative revenue streams, from my seat, if we don't lean into our core work, which is the transference of knowledge, then I think we're missing an opportunity. The question is, are there spaces and markets and places we're not in that we could get into? And my door, if you've got ideas, if you've got connections, if you've got relationships in that space, I would love to try to support that work. And same for everybody else here. If you think there's untapped opportunity, I'm always eager to hear that.
He's going to be your door tomorrow, by the way.
That's good. I mean,
I would just ask you to ask our marketing people and our enrollment management people some hard questions. We got the Lunch and Learn. Dan Hendrickson mentioned that there's an RFP with some marketing projects. Because I sit on the, you know, I represent the Senate on the University Programs Committee, and we had one meeting, we had another meeting next week, and I noticed that we start dinging programs for low enrollment. And by definition, in school leadership, my program is one of those. Right? We have 170 superintendents in the state. We're never going to have a lot in our program. But I would argue that the people in this room, it's not their job to fill seats. It's their job of marketing and enrollment management people. They cannot do that without the people in this room, because it's the faculty that draws students. So just as whatever is coming with the new marketing plans, you just really ask some tough questions, and I think closer collaboration probably would be real appreciated.
And I think that there's going to be, once we kind of get that in place, I do think there's going to be some really consequential conversations with you all about how do we reposition some of these in the marketplace to either be more cost competitive, or be more time competitive, or be more relevant to what is next, maybe versus what it was. And I think that's, you know, that takes redesign time, and that takes resources for us to be able to support you in doing that work. And so, I completely agree. I completely agree. Senator Nakwe?
Real quick, I'm truly curious to find out more about what you were saying about external regulation. If that's on the rise, I mean, what are some of the sources of
that? Yeah, I think if you just simply look at the number of bills that have come out of the Kentucky General Assembly about attestation and certifications, from House Bill 4 to House Bill 390 to attestations to the Department of Ed. And these are not just somebody signs on the piece of paper. You've got to document, here's the demonstrated data that supports that, you know, this is correct and this can be attested to in this space, whether it be financial reporting. I mean, Council on Post-Secondary Ed, there's a lot of reporting additional reporting we're having to do to them. And so when we look at the compliance landscape, it is not getting to be a less compliant space that we operate in. It is becoming a more and more compliance-based space that we operate in. Now, is it a different kind of compliance than what we've used are used to? It absolutely is, which means new systems and new processes to be able to answer those questions in a way that we will all feel good that if we say yes, it's yes, and if we say no, it's no.
Any questions for the president?
Right.
I've got to take time. I wanted to thank President Gant for always taking time. I have to say that certainly EKU faces some real challenging times, marked by times of opportunity, depending on how you want to approach the situation. And I say that to say, I've talked to colleagues about how much their administration interacts with the faculty. And I know oftentimes we talk about shared governance and communication. And in speaking with my colleagues at other universities, I can say that when I say something like, hey, our president is willing to have lunch and learns whenever we request, or that his door is open, or that he's meeting with faculty, Senate leadership, or that he comes to Senate and fields questions. I have colleagues all over the nation. They're like, no, that's not a thing. That's not what our president does. That's not their space. They'll kind of pass the buck to members of their team and you never really see the president. So I do, again, want to take this time and sort of thank you for always being there, having an open door and willing to talk to us about things that are coming down the pipeline that otherwise we would probably not be the light of the day. Thank you again.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Thank you all.
You don't recall anything for you?
Okay.
Next, wants a number.
On Wednesday, folks. I mean, I think hopefully everyone has had a chance to either speak with their chairs or their deans about exactly how the academic affairs budget has been cut for next year. I am a member of the financial committee on the Board of Regents. We will meet on Wednesday, May 6th, to discuss this budget. I am exceedingly concerned about an organization that needs to cut compensation of its employees by 20% in order to balance the books. I don't think I need to be from the business college to know that that's not a real great sign. We also are obviously going to see some major cuts to individuals who do a lot of our regulatory work, our coordinator work, and I have some deeply held concerns that as we continue to roll back compensation and time for those coordinators that we're really risking accreditation programs. I think that we are looking at a lot of people who have done those coordinator positions for a long time, really not feeling that they're valued, not going to want to do that work anymore. We're going to start finding it's rolling, you know, it's a hot potato that nobody wants in the department. And that is not a good situation to have for long-term, high-quality accredited programs. Again, this does not take a rocket scientist to see. So I have some real concerns. I am hoping to see some shared suffering, shall we say, some shared pain amongst the institution. I think that I will commend the provost. I know she was given a very difficult job. She was directed to cut in exactly the line where she cut. So she had the options of coordinator pay, facilitators, summer stipends, winter stipends, and a handful of other like tiny things. So I know that that's basically the cuts that have come out. She was told exactly where those would come from. And I will commend her for her transparency. I think it's very clear where all the money is coming from. I have yet to see anything from any other parts of campus as to where their cuts will be coming from, and I am very curious to see so. I think that we as a campus, before we are again going to slash compensation by 20%, we're going to be, you know, raising the course caps for many classes, in some cases 30, 40, 50%, that we need to see that this budget truly represents the values of an institution of higher education. And until I see that, I'm not going to stop asking questions. So anyway, I'll know more on Wednesday, and I may very well be writing an email to the entire faculty. I'll certainly report back to Senate, but that is what I know. One other thing, and then I'll open it up to questions. Policy 1.1.1, I met with the University Council. I also spoke with the board chair all last week. We have agreed that 1.1.1 will be worked on next year. What is going to happen? I know originally we were planning simply to not make any changes to 1.1.1, the board would not make any decisions on it, et cetera. However, we have some issues with simply the way the SACS compliance calendar rolls and the fact that we need 1.1.1 to be reaffirmed or in place. So our compliance certificate for SACS COC reaccreditation will be in place. So the board will go ahead and vote on 1.1.1, reaffirming it for up to 1 year, meaning that when we get back in the fall, we will start reviewing 1.1.1 with the hope, I am really hopeful that this gets on a February agenda. I think it serves two purposes. It's going to give us the time that we need to review 1.1.1 and look at exactly what the appropriate role of faculty should be in the policy on policies. It is also going to take us out of the summer review cycle so that we will have something that is always reviewed on, say, a February cycle when everybody has been on campus and will continue to be on campus. That. So that is our plan. You will see that on the presumably consent agenda in May, but take a note that is not a full confirmation or affirmation of the policy. It will be up to 1 year. Preferably, it's going to be about 8 months. That's all I have. I'll take questions to the extent I can answer them at this time. Senator Houston.
Just a couple comments that might help you with the Wednesday meeting.
Please.
I don't know the answer to this, but it might be helpful to you to know the date that the summer was set at 4,800.
I believe it was over 15 years ago.
Yes, that's my recollection as well.
Yes, summer salaries have remained stagnant for over 15 years.
Yes, and additionally, although I certainly appreciate the efforts being made for the across the board, it is less than inflation, and it's been significantly less than inflation each of the last 5 years.
And will be completely consumed for many people if you teach the summer school. I actually went ahead and did the calculations for all of the faculty in my department, and all but one will actually be losing money when you do the COLA versus the slashing 20% on summer school.
My point is the COLA is not a COLA.
In the COLA, yeah, we shouldn't call it. In fact, he doesn't call it. It's across the board raise, but
yes.
It's definitely not.
But again, it's missed inflation every year for the last 5 years. So we've received actual real terms pay cuts for the last 5 years.
Very true.
So I think that needs to be kind of shared with the board.
Thank you. I will tell them an economist told me too. So that'll add weight to that statement. Senator Hart.
As far as the coordinator positions, it seems really drastic. Like the person who does that in our department, I mean, I can't see why she would continue doing the job. I mean, I would continue if I didn't get something for doing all that extra work. So whoever made this decision, what do you think they're thinking? Are they thinking that like, someone else will do the job? Or I don't see how you can make that sort of a cut and expect it to be absorbed.
I obviously can't go into the heads of that. I do know that the provost was directed to a certain type of cut, and this is what came out of it to make $3 million. I'll tell you from my perspective, I think when you have coordinator pay that was up at like the $12,000 mark for accredited programs and included course release and that was something that faculty were willing to do for that, and then when it went from having $12,000 with course release to $12,000 with no course release, fewer people were interested in it. When it went from $12,000 to $6,000, the person who was doing it then said no, never mind, won't do it then. Found one person willing to do it for $6,000. Now it's $3,000. And well, you can imagine, I at the moment do not know how we will continue the coordination of that program. I'll be blunt, even if I can guilt trip / snicker someone into doing it for a year, how long will that person be willing to do it? I mean, for those of you who are, I'm sure we have several coordinators in the Senate and individuals who understand learning these accreditation guidelines and really delving into that and attending the conferences and doing the meeting, conducting all the advisory boards and all this and that, it's not just a side thing. It's really all consuming in a lot of ways, and identifies in some ways, forms your identity on campus. I don't know whether that's the assumption that people's identity will be so wrapped up in it will continue. I couldn't answer. But I do have genuine concern, particularly for accredited programs, that if we continue to cut these stipends, there'll be fewer and fewer capable people willing to do it. And those who are willing to do it don't do it for long periods of time, and accrediting bodies will notice. And students ultimately will notice. Sorry.
Senator Hill, sorry
to
name tag was.
You're here, buddy.
Oh, artifact. Last one will get full of would get hands off or leak on any back. So see back here, it's fine. So as a program coordinator, there's a lot of concerns with this, especially because we're an accredited program and that requires a lot of data that we have to keep track of. So who should we relay, like when that's not done with my, I don't have the conversation yet, but I'm sure it's gonna be that I'm not gonna be the coordinator anymore. So who do we let those concerns know to? Like when we don't satisfy things that need to be satisfied for accreditation and we risk losing that, who should we report that to? Because the assumption that I think they think we're gonna work without compensation or just because we care about the students, we don't care about our programs, like we're one of 15 nationally accredited programs, that's huge. So I don't want to lose that, but also like it's kind of not nice to be like, oh, well, you love it so much that you're just going to keep doing it for free. It's not cool. So who do we report those concerns to when we risk losing accreditation, like when we get to that point?
I throw everything on department chairs just because I am one. I do think the responsible thing to do, if I mean, for program coordinators, and I know these conversations are happening on campus, I mean, the responsible thing to do is to inform people soon, right? I mean, compensation for coordinators continues through June 30th. So I think it is only ethical to allow your immediate supervisor to know that you'll no longer be serving in that role prior to July 1. And for that, I assume most people that would be their department chair, but perhaps for others, it's an associate dean or something. But I would recommend speaking with your immediate supervisor, perhaps contacting your dean if you're not not sure if that's appropriate in your case. I don't want to speak to that.
Yeah. But more so like planning the risk, like into next year, when there's no one keeping track of all the things that we need to keep track of for accreditation, who do we let, like if we know that we're going to lose accreditation, who do we let them? Like, who will get the attention? Like, oh, maybe we should relook at this because we don't want this program to lose accreditation. It's a by state, we're required to have the program that we have. It's law. And then if we lose accreditation, people are going to come to Richmond, Kentucky for a program. They can go someplace else a little bit, shine brightly because we have accreditation that draws a lot of students. So, who would we need to let know? Like, when these things start slipping through the cracks because there's no one keeping track of it, who would be a good person to let know? Hey, we're on the verge of losing it. How are we going to get attention to people? You know what I mean? Like that. So maybe it's a question for the body. Who do we need to let know there's an issue?
Yeah. That may be something for the next Senate to discuss. Maybe that's an academic quality committee concern. Again, I would encourage. We'll roll over in an hour here with new charges and new committees. So perhaps that's the first question you ask. Senator Selma?
I think as the board meets and as you get together with the board, it would be viable to ask, how are we going to assess and monitor these changes and the impact they're going to have on the university's life? Because as you start to lose coordinator positions, there has to be a mechanism to say, okay, what's happening to our programs? Because I think the department chairs are going to feel it, but I'm not sure it's going to get transitioned up enough that it's visible, the pain of what's happening. And you can see it across a lot of these changes, facilitators and classes. If I hit the first level and I get a facilitator, but I don't get that facilitator until I'm 50% to the next level, which is what has been documented is what's going to happen. My cap is not 39, my cap is 57. And I'm not gonna teach an online course like that. So departments are going to either have to start capping lower levels of classes, which means we have actually more load going toward those classes, which is more expensive for the university. If we don't have faculty that are gonna teach in the summer, okay, is enrollment and revenue that's generated over the summer, which has very little cost outside of the online program, is going to completely dissipate. If I had a student, I would not tell them to come to DKU over the summer when the likelihood of their classes are going to be canceled because they're not going to meet enrollment, they're not going to be prorated. Like, I think there's a lot of things that are going to happen because of this that are going to end up costing the university more than they think they're going to gain. And whether that's in human capital, whether that's in financial capital, there has to be a mechanism to monitor.
That's definitely something I will bring up to the board. Thank you for that.
Good. And so this echoes something that's come through my email from the viewers. Maybe it's the exact opposite. People are concerned, if many of you are aware, there's tiers of coordinators, and those tiers kind of resemble like a low enrolled, less complex structure to like a tier four, which is high enrolled, high complex, accrediting. That these tiers, it's, and this has been communicated to me, are a concern that these tiers are setting the conditions where people aren't going to do the coordinator role because it's a low enrolled program and it's not complex, just let it go away. If you don't want a coordinator and you're not going to like do its thing, then that writes the prescription that just terminated, which would then free up capital for the heavier lift programs across the campus. So on the one hand, there's a growing concern that yes, it's going to cost more than this is going to save, but if you actually look at the critical functionalism of it all, it could actually terminate the programs where coordinators don't want to step up and do things and just say, hey, if they're not going to coordinate the program, just let it go away and we'll pivot that capital towards something that's more efficient. I don't know if there's a way to bring up that point as well, because that's come through the anxieties as well.
It's faculty feeling very valued.
Yes.
Sorry, that was sarcastic.
I'll be brief. I just want to add to both of these points that, you know, what it comes down to is morale. Mm-hmm. And like, you know, we love our students and some of us love our jobs, but at what point is it too much? And, you know, we can take and take and take, but at what point, you know, does it? And, you know, your report spoke to the exact thing, but it's just, and if where is that consideration being even thought about when we talk about student success and student enrollment? You have to have quality faculty to have, you know, high student enrollment and produce quality graduates. It's hard for me to fathom that no one sees this disconnect. No one with the making these decisions.
I do.
Sees
I do. And again, but budgets are statements of value. And right now we're cutting $3 million out of academic affairs. I'm very curious to see on Wednesday what other cuts there are being proposed. Budgets are statements of values. And for those of you not feeling valued in your coordinating work or in your summer work, or I personally apologize, but I understand it is a statement of value.
It was reported a week or two ago, and many of you may have seen it, that a particular entertainer that's going to be paid upwards of $240,000.
Not that okay. Anyone read the report.
Didn't know if that number was correct.
That doesn't include security or anything.
So
just your payment.
The optics aren't good, right? You know, academics, we got to cut, but we can pay somebody for 2 hours to sing at the Ravine.
45 minutes.
I'm just going to retire and become a pop star and get hired by EKU.
And I'm not music faculty, so I don't want to make any artistic judgment regarding the center. I'll let them do that. But I'm assuming that she's not the basis for many courses we're offering next year. No. I'll let the music faculty. No.
Yeah.
No. Okay. Good. The experts have spoken. I always like to make sure. For all I know, if I don't, my 19-year-old, almost 19 tomorrow, inform me she's a quote unquote washed up meme artist. Mom, I can't believe you guys are spending that much. Washed up meme artist. I didn't even know such a thing existed. Meme artist. Okay. Again, yeah, I hear you. And I'm mad.
They could have hired 4 local artists.
Oh, there's many things
to
we could
play
do.
For much.
We also could have been talking about this
right.
Budget.
Someone faculty could be warm, like
okay. Actually, you'd be amazed at the amount of
musical talent in the Department of Government. We've shared that amongst ourselves. We've kept it a secret for years, but we're willing to, for especially $275,000 for 45 minutes of work.
Well, can you bring that up to the board? Because I keep hearing all of the pain and the sharing and all this. It's bogus. And this is really sticks in my craw.
20% slash to summer compensation is $300,000. We are paying a artist who has been defined as questionably relevant to the talents, $275,000.
And there's no data to support that increases enrollment.
No,
it doesn't increase student involvement on campus. None of it. It's just forking over this, shoveling over this money over here and taking it from over here.
And it totally
avoids the mission of this.
Yeah, and budgets reflect values. Unfortunately, I think we're stuck at a contract. What's so not acceptable is the fact that I don't think anybody's shocked that we're in a real bad position financially working on this year's budget and next. This was something that we knew at the time this contract was signed in February.
Is there a way we can avoid it in the future? Like tell the board, hold on, let's pump the brakes. Anybody seeking over $70,000 here?
Not sign that. Right,
right. But they do need to be aware.
I believe the board learned at the same
time.
Yeah, the board learned at the same time.
I saw Senator
Jesus. Yeah. I guess.
I was going to add, though, that with the new course caps, either they make or they don't, there are going to be more cuts to the summer than articulated currently.
Yeah. It's not just a 20% salary cut. There are going to be a lot of courses that don't make it all, which becomes an even larger compensation issue. I know.
I was just going to ask a question about, you mentioned the whole idea of morale, and that is not just something across Eastern University, but it is across education in general. And I just wondered if the board is having that kind of discussion from a larger 10,000-foot view standpoint of the value of education. What does that look like from a systemic standpoint? Because this is a systemic problem.
I think the board is, I think particularly the board chair is aware that this is not a problem unique to EKU. That is definitely something that is on the radar, but as far as how that's affecting this year's budget, I can't say that I see that yet. But again, the board has yet to meet on the budget.
We have Senator Brian.
Yes. Quick question for you. Has anyone looked at the long-term economics of this from the standpoint of, I was on this faculty senate a few years ago and they tried to cut everything down, and they cut the associate degree of nursing out. They lost the $100,000. And if you start cutting the program or make or break classes, there could be
you're killing the economists here, by the way. Oh, it's die. No, I'm acutely aware of when we cut the associate degree program in nursing, and then we lost, help me out, somebody, how many? It's hundreds of students, right?
Yeah, and we
brought it back because we were missing that money from the hundreds of students who wanted to do that program. I remember that very well. We also lost, less importantly, but we also lost like university-wide Perkins funding because we had just a handful of associate's degrees that was funding travel and professional development and the whole raft of other things across campus because of the large number of associate degrees in that nursing.
But from your perspective, are we doing the exact same thing?
No, we have yet to cut programs.
But what about taking steps for an actual cut?
I think that's going to be determined. That's going to be a forecasting unknowns that you're going to try to hit a moving target. Yeah. Is it on the table? Does it set the conditions where it safeguards? Probably not. Mm-hmm.
About the caps, is that going to be something that's done automatically from the registrars, or is that going to be on a case by case? Like, is the class required for graduation? Like, we have a capstone class and only 5 people are enrolled in it. Is that still going to get cut?
I don't know. I actually have a series of very detailed questions that I tried to get answered by Julie Curry, and Julie Curry has promised to to get back to me when she has the answers, but she did not get back to me before this meeting because I actually have several very specific questions exactly along those lines. Also, like, is it out? What if it's after ad drop and we have 43 students in the class, but they never made the 57? I've got a whole. I gave her probably five or six hypotheticals, and that was also one of them. Like, are we going to be course by special arranging everything that's under 57 students? So we've got to figure that out. I do know, Senator Graham, that Julie Curry is going to work with the provost to get out clear communication. Like, some of the hypotheticals hit her, she was kind of stumped, and she's like, "Yeah, we need to get this all worked out," and she doesn't yet know.
Okay.
But I would assume that's going to come before summer B.
Just to add a comment to that, because some people may not know, when they closed the associate degree in nursing and we brought it back, it was added to the faculty that is the BSN. So we got double the work. So now we're the School of Nursing. They closed that department and all those faculty were let go. Now we have a program and the faculty that was the BSN is now responsible for the entire school nursing with no pay raise. Just let me know.
I wanted to come back to Senator Hill's question about how do we sort of dramatize and make known issues about the work not being done. Because I think the answer will be, if this goes up the ladder, that we can hire a consultant who can study the effects that, or perhaps even create a new vice president position to study.
Now, I'll volunteer for that one.
I think, because I think it's non-based compensation is specifically what the provost was asked to cut. And in my mind, you could not have asked for something that would be more sure to create winners and losers in the way that this budget cut is being squared away. I understand the presentation says this is equitable, but to my eyes, this is almost designed to not be equitable. It's going to create winners and losers. So imagine what would happen if we all collectively said nobody's going to do this work without reassigned time, because it is a pay loss of compensation. And what if we then collectively started to dramatize what the effects of this is going to have on the university. I mean, like, we actually, I think, have, because of what Chair Brent was describing, this is attempting to sort of, through the back door, leverage closure programs. But because of that, I think we actually have some leverage ourselves if we can just actually communicate with each other and decide as a faculty, you know, we don't want there to be winners and losers. Coordinating work is not going to happen until we actually have reassign time or some reasonable amount of compensation for it. I mean, I know that that sentence finds the sky, but what's that?
You need that tenure to be able to do this.
Well, but I mean, like,
what are the parameters?
What are the parameters of what?
If we did that.
Well, I think we have to lose it.
It's a lot.
Could we not at least compile a listing of all the affected programs and coordinators? And then if somebody wanted to say, well, I'm not doing it as a result, they could go on the record if they wanted to.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think that's, we have scary capacity to do it.
Is this something the faculty center could do? Compile a list?
It sounds like a great question for the next half. Any other questions for Faculty Region Novelet?
To kind of short circuit what could turn this into an hour long convention session, because we do have a lot of reports to get to. Dr. Noble and I have had conversations about some things that Faculty Senate could do in the coming year, and we will talk about them in the organizational meeting.
Senator
Lau?
Senator
Lau. Kind of a follow-up to Senator Hill's comment about communication. You're obviously very accessible to us. The rest of the Board of Regents members are not accessible. I assume they must have institutional emails. It would be wonderful if those were posted on the website so that communication could go directly to them.
instead of through the president of the university council, whoever feels so is right now.
Okay. I will look into that. Did you have a question? Or I thought I said
it. This is Senator Irwin.
I have a name tag.
I understand budget cuts, but it doesn't make sense to me that some program coordinators are, if they choose to continue to do the work, they're not going to get compensated. We can grade papers for 7 weeks as a facilitator and make $2,000.
For now.
You what?
Senator Day just said for now. I will keep the Senate up to date. Again, the budget meeting occurs at 9:30. Right, I'll give you. I might have a room. You want to come?
Is that an open meeting?
Yes. Just a sec. It's 9:30, or excuse me, 9 a.m. Excuse me, 9 a.m. I misspoke. 9 a.m. in PAL 229. And then just so it's on your calendar, the board meeting, next board meeting is Wednesday, May 13th at 9 a.m. in PAL 219. That is also an open meeting. More the merrier. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
I wish I could have set more positive conditions for our next speakers, but please, I yield the floor over to our student government leadership. Really hoping they turn this around. Yeah.
I'm so sorry for my informal dress. You know, it's finals week. I hope you guys can understand. So my name is Autumn Konkusen, and I'm going to be your incoming student body president. And a little bit about me, I am a sophomore, and I'm also a history teaching major. So I'm going to be a high school history teacher someday.
Hi, everyone. My name is Trevor Smith. I will be the student body vice president for this upcoming year. Autumn and I ran on an executive slate ticket together. We're very excited to come into this upcoming role. You all raised some interesting questions and concerns. And I think one of the things we were talking about back there was the need for greater collaboration between SGA and Faculty Senate. And we're going to make that a priority in our administration and make sure that, you know, you all are hearing from us and that we're hearing from you.
Yeah, I do think listening to you guys, we are affected and in the same way, in a similar but different way as you guys. We raise the same concerns. So I think hearing from you and then, you know, you hearing from us will be really helpful for that. So I guess I'll share a little bit about what Trevor and I ran on or our goals for the future, and then he can kind of add in his own spin on that. So our three main things were engagement, accessibility, and authenticity. So for engagement, we want to have higher student engagement in SGA. I don't know who here is class professors, but we have a lot of class represented in SGA, but not a lot of other colleges represented. So if you have any good students that you'd like to, you know, send to SGA, we'd love to have them. So recruiting them is going to be great. And then also just serving our students as well, making sure we're at student events, making sure we have SGA volunteers at certain things going on campus. Next is accessibility. I've already kind of talked to some administrators about this, so this is going to be a little bit of an uphill battle, but we want to have better physical and audio accessibility for our students, and then also be able to expand health and wellness resources on campus for our students, because sometimes those resources are hard to get to or hard to connect with. And lastly, with authenticity, I think all of you guys have seen some issues with this as well, but holding the administration accountable and also holding us accountable for students with SGA and how we actually are planning to implement stuff that we want to change. And then also educating students on administrative changes, because I don't think a lot of them understand how things are run or why the university makes some of the decisions they do. So helping bridge that gap.
I think we do have a very similar goal, and that is to improve student outcomes. And so we're very excited to work along with you guys however we can. So my main responsibility is to chair the Senate for SGA. And along with that, you know, it's been really a fascinating process. We're currently reworking our constitution and bylaws. We're working with our team on that. And so that'll be coming up for us. But one thing we actually want to, that we're going to ensure is that we're going to have an SGA representative at all faculty senate meetings, just to make sure we hear about the concerns you all are having and that we can join you all in solidarity for any concerns in regards to that. But also, you know, send us your talent. You all have, you know, just as much access to students as we do. And, you know, if you find a very avid and very excited student who you think will do great work in advocacy, please send them to us. We want to use their talents to help advocate for improved student outcomes for the student body. Additionally, where was it? I think I lost it. Nope. Yep. I lost it. But yeah, no, I got it. Nope.
Well, one thing I would like to add is I did hear a concern that sometimes regents, you know, are hard to contact. Obviously, you all know Lynette, so that's obviously a resource, but you can always contact me as well. I know I'm just a little student regent, but I'm always there to voice concerns there as well when I go to those meetings.
One thing, I found it again. There we go. So a main thing that I want to do is, you know, our budget has been lessened. The SGA budget has been lessened consistently for years and years and years. And so one of the things that I want to make sure we're doing and sort of we can offer the same type of resources for our students is use our resources on campus. And that includes you all. So I would absolutely love it if any of you all would be interested in coming to speak to Senate and like give them advice, professional advice into their respective careers. Any kind of like services like that, we really want to make sure we're supporting our students the best way possible. Think professional development. We want to do some stuff like that within our Senate this year. And I think you guys would be absolutely amazing for that. So you may be getting emails from me in the near future. I apologize. I'll make sure they're like nice. Like one of the biggest pet peeves I learned from my time in the history department was how to properly address an email. Dr. Spock got onto me a lot during her time. And so that's, I'm good. I'm better now. So I'll make sure that that's the case for you all.
Any questions? Go ahead. Senator Day.
Tell us your name again, Autumn.
Oh, Autumn Konkusin. Yeah, I have a really long last name. It's 11 letters. If you don't want, you can just refer to me as Autumn K. My email. Oh, yeah. Email purposes. Yeah. So I do not have my staff email yet. So it's going to be Autumn and then underscore KONGKOUSON and then at my mail. Yeah, you know.
I've already shared some opinions with you before, personally, privately, but I just want to make sure you really don't undervalue your role as a student regent, because I think just the term student regent kind of suggests something, but your vote and your voice counts just as much as Senator Noblet's, and just as much as anyone, any regent appointed by the governor. And frankly, this, in my opinion, the student regent vote has been a wasted vote. Don't undervalue that. Don't take that for granted. You've got a powerful voice, so use that
opportunity. Thank you for that.
Following up on that, this is Senator Howell. One of the biggest problems for any board of regents is that they don't know what is going on within the organization. The reason why there is a student regent, a faculty regent, and a staff regent is to provide a direct line of communication to the board about what is going on at the university. You are probably one of the three most important people on the board. So yeah, just echoing what Dr. Lauk is saying, do not undervalue that. Speak up, talk to them, tell them what is going on in the student body. You are basically the only way they will ever.
I was just going to reiterate that and the fact that you do not have limitations that sometimes faculty members do. So being able to exercise your voice in that way, just as the two senators have mentioned prior, it's so incredibly important if you're passionate about that you exercise that voice and you encourage other students to do so as well.
Questions?
I know you, Trevor, but welcome. And thank you for committing to being here. I don't know the last time we had a Senate president at one of these meetings.
Hoping to be here continually throughout the year, so we'll see y'all around.
I saw another hand up, I believe. All right, well, with that, I want to go ahead and say student government leadership, thank you so much. And to just a minute, instead of saying student region, just thank you, Region K.
Moving to our next item of business. We're gonna go ahead and do some special recognitions. Administration already left, so I can go ahead and tackle that later. So in my mind, right, I was gonna have like this whole thing where like I announce names and people coming off, and then you do the line and stand up and be recognized. But given the fact that we're already an hour and 10 minutes in and we've got a whole nother meeting, and then you look at me and be like, hey, I'm glad this guy's leaving. I want people to understand those who have served on the committee. And I was going to name them off one by one, but I think I signed like 51 pieces of paper. And that's also a lot. You probably want to kill me for that too. But I am going to ask if you do so kindly oblige me and everybody who's coming off Faculty Senate, if you could just please stand up so that way we can actually acknowledge what you've done on Senate over the last 3 years. And in some cases, I want to draw special attention to Senate Bishop Ross, who has been on this committee for 9 years concurrently.
Yeah.
Y'all stand up if you're coming off Senate. I know it's awkward. I'm going to have you do it. Thank you so much. And then as you all leave today, if you are rolling off Senate, we do have certificates for you of your participation and successful conclusion of your time on Senate with us. Moving on to new business, there's a summary report that I worked with Ethan. Thank you again, Ethan, for sending the summary report. From my understanding, it's a summary of all the reports that have been pushed through so far. So no real new business to highlight on the report. So that's there for your reference. For policy, see the... Hello. Yes.
I do not have this document. I cannot find it in the Google Drive. Where is this so that we can see the summary report? And
that was sent in an email to everybody earlier today, unless it did not go out. Right?
I will take another look.
I will. I'll send that out. What I will do,
TBD. Yeah. The agenda that's in the Google Drive just has TBD.
Gotcha. Give me 1 second. I'll send it to you.
Awesome.
Okay. Let me see if I send that out. I'm gonna find an email where everybody's on it and just send it super quick. Mm-hmm. And where's one of your emails? That's good. Here we go. 82 others. That's gotta be it. If not, it's going to have a head. Sorry about your email. They should be coming through. You have mail. I don't know how many we got there. All right, it should be coming through, correct? Good, thank you for that. Legislative session, we've talked about that. The president hit on the big items that came through, more specifically House Bill 500 and the secondary and third order effects that it seems that the budget cut's gonna have and likely continue to have in years to come as we kind of navigate that water. So I don't wanna belabor that point anymore. There are 4 points that we need to vote on that came to me through Associate Provost Weiss and the Council on Academic Affairs. There were 4 program closures, two of which were recommended for closure during the program review and 2 that went up for closure just due to roll enrollment. Those were the cybersecurity and digital forensics, English and writing professions, and the Masters of Arts, environmental education, which is a grad cert, and then land surveying, which is also an undergrad certificate. So if you all could just bear with us, our special IT Senator Ginn is going to quickly draft up, unless it's already ready to go to send out.
Forum at once.
Yes, to streamline it.
Yeah.
And that should be coming through your, yes.
Can I just go back to the legislative session for 1 second?
100%.
So, and I forget what the House bill number was, 490 or something like that. So have we talked about how that's going to be implemented? Because I think what the House bill states is it's you can get 30-day notice that you're being released because you don't align with current resources?
So we actually have, and what I'm going to do is I'm going to lean on Senator Howell and Faculty of Regent Nava. I know you all have been engaging in conversations on kind of the very specific nuances of what that's going to look like. From my understanding, some of the language is kind of built into our current policy. However, there's some nuances that need to be worked through. So I would like to answer your question, but I'm not the best resource to do that. So I will yield to Senator Howell and Regent Nava on that. Yeah, please.
Now or?
House Bill 490 is going to affect policy 4.6.16.
So it was passed.
It was passed.
Could you explain what that bill was to everybody? So we can basically be fired, even if you have tenure, and be given 30 days notice that you don't align with current resources and be gone.
Well, you have to be given at least 30 days.
Yeah, so what the statute does is it modifies the existing bill or the existing law which governs the removal of faculty at state institutions, which currently has a financial exigency, the university shutting down, and I forget what the third one is.
Program closure
are the three reasons that are currently in the law. This just adds to that law a fourth reason, which is lack of alignment between university resources and goals and the program itself.
Can I just add though that financial exigency is something that has to be declared by the university officially. Program closure is a very explicit thing.
There's a process that governs that.
Yes, but
very vague is where you're getting.
Yeah, it's a very vague.
The statute does not have a definition for lack of alignment. Dr. Nava, let's take it from there.
The conversations I've had thus far, my understanding is this needs to be in, this needs to be passed by October 1, so it will come to the board in September. Currently, we are looking to see what other institutions. I know that AUP is active in this discussion. There are other other institutions, obviously, in the state are also starting to look at this. I think the big thing is going to be defining that new category, exactly how much wiggle room is left in it. I think that's probably going to be.
Well, it seems right now there's nothing but wiggle room.
Exactly.
Okay.
Which is why I think it needs.
So what needs to be passed by October 1st by us? And a definite, we're going to have our own definite language for what that means?
Yeah, 4616 has to have that additional category. Actually, the timing, the 30 days is at least 30 days. So we actually technically don't have to change our 1 year.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But the fourth category will have to be added and it will need to be defined in some meaningful.
It seems to me that given the current budget crunch and probably a projected one going forward, given shrinking enrollments nationwide, that it's probably in the administration's best interest to leave that as budgety as possible.
Yeah.
And so I think we need to be on guard for that fact.
And I can speak to that's something that Senator Nockway and the AUP is tracking not only here, but at a state level as well, in that the concurrence of House Bill 500 with 490 seem to layer on each other quite seamlessly.
Yes. and I mean, join your AUP chapter, I guess would be the first thing that I would say. We're having like vigorous conversations about that right now.
Yeah, across universities.
And you are correct in everything that you said. Yes. And so we need to intervene in the, and by we, I mean the back of the Senate and the back of the bar, you can intervene in the drafting of policy 4.16. 4.16. Thank you.
I might be wrong because I'm separated from the main campus with a bypass. But I don't have the distinct feeling that most faculty realize that this is passed and what it means. I don't think that's been communicated to faculty very well. So I think we need to make some, maybe that responsibility lies with the Senate, that we need to communicate to faculty that there's been a significant change to the understanding of tenure. It basically does not exist unless we clean up that fudgy language pretty specifically.
Yeah.
Yes, Senator Day.
I think it would help all senators in the room if we somehow
draft a statement written by faculty senate and Houston, I think you could play a significant role in this in terms of what we can share with our faculty about the impact.
I imagine this would fall to one of the committees. I don't know which one. It best, not that I would be opposed to joining one of those committees, but seems like this is a specific, I don't know which one.
I know that the provost report pushed out a few meetings ago that this was on the horizon, that it actually was passed.
Right.
Now, the best way to communicate that out, we can work with incoming leadership to kind of best figure out how that communication plan can work. If it's going to be tasked out with the standing committee, get pushed out through a faculty senate body as a whole as a notification item, or just go through faculty senate leadership. I know it's gone out through the provost's office. Her report has expressed that, but the extent to which faculty senate and how that communication piece is something that we might need to work on.
I think it's easier for faculty to understand when it comes from other faculty, because these kinds of things get buried in provost reports, and not just provost, all reports from the university. I think they get buried. I think they need their own email. I think it needs to be focused only on this issue and then share.
Well, that leads us to a different question regarding policy work. I guess we can go ahead and pivot to that. It's as you know, we've been talking about policy 1.1.1 for some time, and in fact, the Regent Noblet expressed that after talking with council that given SAC's timeline and accreditation, that that's going to be extended a year. And so maybe this is a good time to have a conversation. I know there's some discussion about how edits to policies and that procedure is going to roll out. And during the last faculty senate meeting, we proposed the idea, and I've run it by council, and they seem pretty amenable to it, depending on how it's going to work and the workload, is to actually stand up a standing committee in Senate or a work group with Senate that works as a liaison with council's office to monitor policies that are coming down, to work with Amy Scarborough's office, to communicate policies that are happening at state level, to do a line-by-line edit should faculty senate want a line analysis. So that way the overly taxed council's office, should there be extensive revisions happen, doesn't just send out a fully drafted policy, but the faculty senate actually has a standing committee tasked with working with council on policy revisions and updating faculty senate, a larger faculty body, regarding policies, both internal and external to the university. That's something that's been floated by the council. They seem agreeable to. I talked to academic affairs. They're also agreeable to it. The only then question is, does faculty senate have the bandwidth and the resources and the personnel to pull off yet another standing committee if we're already having a hard time staffing too? Go ahead. Senator Nocturne.
I love the energy of trying to get through the agenda. I'm just going to, but did the vote go out?
We haven't made a motion. That has not gone out at all yet.
Okay.
That got halted the second we started talking about policy work.
Program
social
spend.
Yeah, the vote
is actually
out.
Is it? Yes. That's what I wanted. Oh, okay. That was to hold off on that.
Okay. Yep. So absolutely. Okay. So yep. Has that? I'm just checking. Have people voted?
Yes, but only like 11.
Okay.
So pivoting to that, being complicated. Just lots of conversation topics. My bad. So that's a conversation piece regarding policy. Moving to how it's going to disseminate, that can take effect of a standing committee on policy, or it's just going to go out through faculty leadership, whether it's a whole letter as a notification or it'll be tasked out to a standing committee.
The first thing I would say is I would encourage all faculty members to go ahead and inform their faculty of this change in the law. If we're talking October 1st, we don't have a lot of engagement period from the time everyone comes back for the fall semester, gets into their classes, and we're going to be, I guess, the board's going to be voting something October 1st. And then
the board vote actually will take place before that. It will take place on September 1st.
Okay, so I think we need to let our faculty know now. Okay, I don't think we have time for a committee to draft a. I think everyone should take responsibility to let their faculty know this change in the law and be tell them to be aware of something coming down, from, I guess, administration is going to draft policy. Well, how we're going to define alignment with resources. Who's in charge of defining that?
I would assume we're going to have a policy committee put together, a drafting team put together. Yeah, it's going to probably start over the summer. So,
Sure.
Any other talking points on 490? All right, so what we've done is we've closed down the vote and we're going to reissue it. But before we do that, do I hear a motion to vote on all four of these independently, but is one vote going out? So there's going to be separate line votes for each one of these closures, but instead of sending them out one at a time, they're going to go out in full as a mass vote.
Before we do that, is there any representative here from those departments? Like, can tell us, do you want to get rid of these or is this against your will? Because I think that's an important issue.
Sure.
I can speak to the environmental ed graduate certificate. I teach as part of that program and it is against the will of faculty and students.
Right.
If that closes.
How about that English?
It's complex, Todd. I mean, we have as a department did vote for so grudgingly, but I mean it was a decision.
I don't think we should vote them all for
individually. There are going to be separate voting items, but instead of them going out one at a time, there'll be four items for you to vote on.
How about cybersecurity or land surveying?
All right, hearing no other discussion points, do I hear a motion to vote on these items?
Further discussion. Is there anyone in those representing those areas at all? They can't tell us if yes or no.
That's what they were just speaking to.
Yeah, I know, but no, nobody said anything. Anyone say,
we
is there any representation from those programs?
We don't have anybody from STEM or criminal justice.
From college.
Well, criminal justice and wherever cybersecurity is located, is there any representation here?
I'm in the college, but not part of that department, so I can't speak directly to it.
Okay.
Cybersecurity is not criminal justice, not the college of justice, safety, military side. My land surveying is. And in Skoda, there's not any real policy. That's faculty.
I just didn't hear you. Land survey.
Land survey and faculty. There's only faculty.
Cybersecurity?
Not in our college.
Right.
Any other discussion points on these before hearing a motion to vote on these items?
A yes vote means that we agree with the closure.
Yes. All right. Do I hear a motion to vote on these items?
Second.
Senator Day, seconded by Senator Cogdill. Any other discussion regarding the closure or the vote to close these programs in alignment with CSA's recommendation that was pushed up through either the review or faculty decision?
Does anyone that already voted want to change their vote? You closed that?
We closed it.
Okay.
It's being reopened given the fact that there's a breach in the procedure of it.
No vote.
So the new vote that's come out is a fresh slate.
Great. Thank you.
Senator Howell.
Since English writing was not excited about this closure, could some of the faculty from English give us a little bit of insight in that, i.e. so that I can write a report about it later?
Yeah, talk to me, Matthew.
I'll talk to you. Awesome.
Okay, I forgot to talk to you about that. Yes.
And then what was the other ones? Environmental education? Can you tell me a little bit about environmental education?
I can tell you all you want to know about environmental education.
What I'm hearing is talk to you after.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Okay, we'll do.
Any other discussion points? All right. Go ahead and send out the vote.
It is the same link, but even if you voted before, it's all been deleted. So if you could please vote again, please.
Yes, for land surveying, enough is coming.
Okay.
The no for environmental education. Need a few more for the other two. Actually, a yes for the English and writing and for cybersecurity.
So just one nay overall so far.
Correct. And that's all of them.
It's all votes?
Yeah. I mean, there's still a few coming in, but it was...
Okay, so three passed, one nay, and the nay was four. Mm-hmm. Two. Just to clarify, the nay was four.
Let me clarify what?
What the...
Environmental education was.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, thank you for the vote. Is those coming in? We'll still collect those, but it sounds like everything that's going to come through has... All right, other comments and questions that came through faculty center, the faculty body, there's been a number of questions that have come through regarding House Bill 500. A lot of those have been addressed already. The one that just came through within the last couple of days, we still need to work with the registrar and our awesome website. Apparently, people are still having a hard time finding when to post final exam grades because that communication oftentimes doesn't get released until like a week or two before, and it's nowhere to be found on our awesome navigatable website. So we'll be working with the registrar's office to release that. Interestingly enough, come to find out, the registrar's office does have a master template calendar that they can share and work with. But however, because dates move, they're kind of hesitant to do so. So we've been trying to work with that office to try to figure out if we can't disseminate some information a little bit ahead of time, or at least send out that calendar with the understanding that things may shift left or right a little bit, but just so that faculty moving forward in their semester kind of know when dates, when due dates regarding progress reports, midterms, and finals are supposed to be posted. So that's something that just recently came through. Ongoing business items, faculty grievance liaison. I was super excited that we had a nomination and somebody that we elected, and then unfortunately, that individual is going to be stepping away from the university, which took us back to square one. Is very disheartening because we had a grand total of one nomination for the role. So we were really putting all our eggs in that basket and we had to go back to the drawing board. But as of this morning, I'm happy to report that we did have another nomination who was very excited to take on the role. That is Dr. Callahan out of the Department of Social Work. So we thank them for their willingness to serve in that role. I sent the CV and the resume to the executive committee, and they're currently reviewing that and voting on it now. Once that gets solidified, we can go and push out that information to the larger faculty senate body. So I go ahead and extend my warmest thanks to Dr. Callahan for being willing to step into that role. I'm gonna go ahead and yield to Sabrina here. Sabrina has been doing a lot of work regarding updating the faculty senate bylaws with Senator Bishop Ross. Over the last few years, there's been a number of changes made that have been put into practice, but not onto paper yet. And so we're currently working on finalizing what updating the faculty senate bylaws is looking like, other than or above and beyond what we've talked about last meeting. Sabrina, was there any other updates to share with everybody? Is it still business as usual? Business as usual, we'll take it. And with that, we released a Google folder for all the standing committees to submit their final reports that should be linked in the document that you're currently looking at. So for all the committees that submitted their final reports, we go ahead and thank you ahead of time. For all those that still need to submit those, we're going to kindly ask that you do so. But with that, we're going to go ahead and pivot to looking at end of year reports. If you want to just give wave tops on what your committee did this year, that's great. If you just want to say, hey, see the report that's attached in the document, that will also suffice to, again, be respectful of everybody's time, because again, we're going to move on to an organizational meeting. But I know the number of items that the standing committees worked on weren't not only numerous, but a heavy lift. So I want to give the time for each committee to kind of talk about the effort, the time, and the energy that went into the work that you all did. So with that, we'll go to the Academic Quality Committee. Is there any, yes?
Oh,
That could have been any better time. That could have been any better time.
Yay.
Senator Yoder?
Yeah, I'm the co-chair of the Academic Quality Committee. You can see my report, and so I'm not going to read through it. It's getting late, but I think this is a particularly important committee for the Senate next year. You know, there's a lot of things changing. The tuition model changed, the Book Smart program changed, the general education changed, block scheduling is different, right? And now these budget cuts. So there's a lot going on that can affect all kinds of, all range of.
Let's add the change of facilitators and the program coordinators and the enrollments in the summer and degree timeline. So.
So I think it's a good committee to try and stay on top of all that. But there's so many confounding variables. It's going to be challenging.
Now, just to reiterate, so it goes in the notes, one of the talking points that the AQC was talking about was given the fact that the personnel attached to AQC isn't as expansive it needs to be to take on the work, that perhaps there needs to be some ad hoc committees formed underneath the AQC to take on some of the work that's coming, especially given the pivots made, we'll say that, due to the budget constraints that are coming down. Thank you for that. Moving to budget. I'll go ahead and pull this open so it's ready for you all.
Thanks, John. We do this because by bylaw that the budget committee does an annual presentation at the end. It's not just that we like to do this. I'm going to give kind of the overall high level report, and then Eric is going to focus in on the athletic budgets. I want to kind of first narrow the scope of what we are.
Want to go to full presentation? Yeah, we can.
So the focus is not to make us all experts on the budget. We are not that. At best, what we've done is we've had three major areas of our focus. One is we received financial updates from the CFO, vice president, whoever that is at a given month, and try to ask questions and just try to have some understanding. But we don't have the ability to get into the depth like the CFO does. We spent time looking at the net revenue scorecard from Bethany Miller earlier in the year. And then we spent 3 months looking at the athletic budgets, two within ourselves, and Eric has done amazing analysis that he's going to share. And then the final month was with Kyle Motes and Dusty Ridner, the CFO for athletics. I will also talk about some high-level financial trends and then some concerns and progress or positives that I see. All of these numbers are based on the audited annual financial report. So this is not current budget year information. This is all always a look back because, in my opinion, those are the numbers that count. Those are what the auditors have come in and certified. You can see that the history as of last year, fiscal year 25, this is the first time in 3 years we've had a positive comparison between revenues that we take in and expenditures that get spent of operating expenditures. This doesn't include pensions and all that stuff, capital expenses. This is just the operating expenditures. So it's in going in the right direction. Employee salaries, basically that has gone up 2.5%. So that makes sense because we got the 2%, I'll use the term interchangeably, even though it's not the COLA raise, it's a 2% increase, and then there's another 0.5% that accounts for other kinds of employee headcount, probably. When you look at some of the core related activities, instruction has actually gone down in fiscal 25 from the previous 2 years, from FY23 to 24. If you look at research, that has gone down again, 889,000, 885 down to 539,000, and libraries has gone down a little bit, they've gone down from the high of fiscal year 22 of 4.6 million. So this is the negative news. Those kind of core related expenses, investments have been going down. Some of the progress that I think we've made that continue is the increased commitment to research funds. The current budget now has the 500,000. They're stair-stepping it up to a million of recurring funds. So the following year will be at 750,000 until the fourth year when we're at a million. And the commitment is to keep that million recurring. It appears the foundation funds have stopped being rated, was the big debate 2 years ago, I guess it was now. Increases for faculty promotion have gone up. There are the moderate 2% increases in pay and base pay. Of course, inflation's over 3%, so it's still not keeping up, but it's something. We see the continued increase, the trend of revenue to expenditure increases, and the increasing budgeted surpluses. The reason the budgeted surpluses is a thing is because the Moody's, our financial rating service, has dinged us. And when we go out to borrow money for long-term debt or short-term, because we don't have money in the bank or haven't had money in the bank, it hurts us financially. We pay higher interest rates because of that. Chair Eaves has made it a point to start budgeting for those surpluses, those reserves, so that we can start to build that up. And that has been pointed out by Moody's for several years in a row. Areas of concern, there is no long-term plan for finances. We don't have a 3 to 5 year plan. If you go to any of your school districts in your home counties, undoubtedly they have a 3 to 5 year plan. The answer is that, well, it's the unpredictability. We can't predict what tuition is going to be. We can't predict how many students. We can't predict the legislature. Well, that's fine, but no organization can ever predict the future accurately. You make your best estimates, and then you adapt. You adjust every year as new information comes in. This was the plan with the budget, the campus budget working committee that Brian Mullins began a year ago. And Derek, were you on that? No, Tom Martin represented the deans. I was on it. John, I think you might have been, Lisa Kay before that. But then that went away. And the idea of the working group was to do some of this long range planning to help move this ahead. Because of the instability in the position of vice president and CFO, that has fallen to the wayside. There was a virtual meeting, I think in February or March, and that was really just to introduce Jackie Dudley, who came in as the interim. But before that, it was in the fall. So we still don't have any type of long-term financial planning. As I said, the instability in the vice president CFO position, Jackie is here. She's retired from Murray. And so she understands higher ed, and she's just here to fill the gap until another CFO comes in. Recall that Brian Mullins came in following a failed search for that position, I guess it's 3 years ago now. And Brian was a refreshing change because of his openness and transparency. But he found something better in the private sector, apparently. The athletic budget is dictated by two people. I mentioned that in my question to the president earlier. The absence of the meaningful campus budget work group, the outdated model of decision-making. I think we've all probably seen the slides that came from academic affairs that went to the chairs and then were shared with faculty about all the cuts and that. And it was made very clear that apparently it's academic impressions that trains us and trains the leadership here. And we are all from the chair level down supporters. And the role that supporters have is to do just that, to support and to smile. Well, this top-down management model that academic impressions is training us on is some of the most cutting-edge leadership management practices of the Industrial Revolution. I mean, that's 1900s stuff. That whole model that they employ should be flipped around. And that's, I mean, it just goes to shared governance, it's shared decision making, particularly when there's hard problems to address. It's not going to print money for the university. It's not David McFadden's fault that we don't have money. It's largely the legislature's fault, but process matters. And if that the model was flipped over so that faculty and chairs were more involved in these decisions, better decisions would be made. But that's not the model that you have. Inadequate state appropriations is another area of concern. I just said, I mean, it's we're the third largest institution, and yet it's the R1s that are getting those dollars. I sat in Representative Truitt's office with Trevor, and we were talking about the waiting issue and how students, and he was sitting next to another intern who was at Louisville, I think?
UK.
And I asked the representative, I said, how is that girl more valuable than that boy right there in terms of finances? They shouldn't be, but they are. And so we get screwed because of that vision model. There was legislation to change that, but that died quickly. I believe the working group on the performance funding model did pass, so there will be expanded representation of other legislators to look at this issue, but nothing concrete has occurred. The other issue is auditor rotation. Just from a quick look at our past accounting, audited financial statements, it looks like we've had Crowe or version of Crowe, it looks like there may have been a merger change, for about 16 years. And I'll rely on our business faculty, the auditing people, but generally that's not the 16 years is a little long to go with the same firm. Granted, you may change a managing partner that oversees the audit, but still you want to change auditing firms every now and then, not too often because there's a lot of investment in terms of learning the systems. But when you've got this long period of time with the same auditing firm, this is a level of comfort that sometimes needs fresh eyes on books and numbers. And it's probably, 16 years is a long time. It's probably a good question to ask. And if you need any evidence of what happens when you have the same auditing firm for a long time, just look at Fayette County Public Schools. And that'll probably give you a little indication. And now, the really interesting information, we'll see Harrison going to talk about the athletics.
Thank you, Ray, and thank you, everybody. Let me preface this by saying first, you know, as a half-time classicist, I fully support athletics and, you know, the idea that at a university, we ought to train and develop, you know, the full person, and that athletic endeavors are part of that, go alongside the life of the mind. But I do have some major concerns about where we stand and the trends that have been in place and developing at least over the past decade. And I hope to share, you know, enough of that to give you a pretty good picture of what's been going on. And what we heard earlier from the president in our current context, namely that while spending on our core mission on academics is being compressed and constricted or made more efficient, however you want to put it, on the one hand, with a flat budget commitment to sports, even if their subsidy effectively is going to be a little bit less because they're being asked to bring in more money. When you factor that out relative to where that sits in terms of the overall spending of the university, it's of a piece with what's been going on, namely that spending on academics has been decreasing as a relative proportion of our overall spending. And spending on athletics has been increasing. And that's the big picture. I don't think that will surprise anybody, but some of the particulars might be new and surprising to people. And I don't know why this isn't forwarding. Okay, sorry, thank you. So there are lots of ways to look at and try to parse out, you know, where the money comes from and where it goes. And I do apologize for the relatively small image here, but you have this in your package as well, if you want to take a look at this more closely. And one way to get this information to look at it is through the Knight Newhouse database, which I know that Senator Howell has presented on in the past.
And you may or may not have seen some of this information, but first, I have a couple of slides here that give us two different ways of thinking about the trends at EKU and at, for the football championship subdivision as a whole. So that all the other colleges and universities that compete in the NCAA at the same level that we do. And what you notice here, first of all, is that where EKU stands relative to others is that our athletics budget has increased 27% in the past, well, I'll say the past 5 years, but this is the most recent information available in the database. So from 2019 to 24, but if you look at the most recent budgets as well, that trend, I think, basically continues. What's really notable here is that our athletics budget has increased 27% adjusted for inflation, right? So it's grown in absolute dollars, but it has also grown adjusted for inflation and relative to the FCS, which has only grown by 3%. So we have
that's
been
decreased by 3%.
Sorry, decreased by 3%. So the net difference. Now I do confess, as a disclaimer, that I'm a literature professor, but I did get a 780 on the SAT in math, so I think this is correct. Notwithstanding my mistake there at first, we outstrip our similar institutions in FCS by 30% over this five-year period. And there is a link there if you want to look at our institutional profile in more detail. If we go back five more years, so roughly the past decade, okay, the most recent, including the most recent numbers that we have, that gap is even more noticeable. EKU spending on sports is up 48% adjusted for inflation compared to up 15% for FCS and so on. So that's a difference of 33%. Now, interestingly, the Knight Newhouse database, which is, you know, all about transparency in college academics, and all sports programs are required to submit, and all institutions are required to submit the full spectrum of information to this, including academic spending. So if you count all of the money that's spent at every institution to support its core mission, and it's complicated how they go about this, but I trust that there's an internal rationale for it. Well, look what has happened over the past, again, roughly decade, but in this case, I don't know why, but for whatever reason, the database only goes up to 2022 for academics, but we can get a rough cross comparison here. So in that time period, EKU spending on academics has gone down 17%, whereas that of other similar schools, okay, has only gone down 2%, net difference of negative 15. So we're spending 15% less on academics than our counterparts, while spending 30 to 33% more on athletics than our counterparts. And, you know, you can look at a more recent snapshot, the five-year period from 2017 to 2022, and you get a 20% differential. So this is one way of thinking about what's been going on in this inverted relationship between our proportional spending upon academics, our core mission, and athletics, which, again, you know, I do think should be a part of a full collegiate experience. Another way to look at what's been going on is to examine our own documents internally. And I started doing this just out of curiosity a few years ago when President McFadden opened up our annual convocation by declaring that we were making a $21 million investment in sports. Now, having served on the Faculty Senate Budget Committee in 2016 and 17 and 18, when we were going through all kinds of budget cuts and reappropriations and so on, I knew that at that time, we spent a lot less. We invested a lot less on sports. And it surprised me in that moment to hear the president make this statement, because I assumed that the athletic side of the university had been contracting and becoming more efficient and so on, just as we had been doing. And we were promised that they were doing. So I started looking at the documents, and these are based on the EKU operating budgets that are published online. And it, you know, you can look at all the details of how I went about this, but basically to go back 10 years, okay, we were spending $14.5 million, investing $14.5 million on athletics. And our return on that was 2.2. That factors in everything. All the money we get from the NCAA, sponsorships, foundation fund support, ticket sales, right? So the next several slides all have this kind of formula. How much are we spending? How much are we making? And what is the net result? You can call this a loss or you can call it a subsidy. I think the typical term is a subsidy. So the entire institution is subsidized, was subsidizing athletics to the tune of $12.2 million, which, and this is what to me is the most interesting set of figures. You know, our state appropriations and our tuition, right, are the two things that form the bulk of our revenue every year. And so what has athletics been doing relative to that is what I really wanted to know. Well, 10 years ago, it was 17.94% of our state appropriations, 7.99% of tuition revenue, or this is, I think, the most telling number, 5.53% of those combined. The next year, pretty similar, 14.5 million, again, roughly 2 million, and the numbers are about the same, 5.6% of combined state and tuition revenues. But if, and we could, you know, I've done some of the numbers in the interim, but looking at the past 2 years, we see that there's been a dramatic expansion. And again, not just in terms of absolute numbers and or keeping up with the Joneses, you might say, we've been outstripping them, but eating up a greater portion of our internal budget, if I can put it boldly. So in the year that the president announced we were investing $21 million, we brought in $4.7, which is a lot more money than we used to bring in, but it's still, right, a loss. By at this point, 6.85% of combined state and tuition revenue, right? In 9 years, 8 years rather, that's gone up. Then I started thinking, well, what is that? What does that subsidy translate into for the average student athlete? And then what does it cost the average student who's paying tuition here? So 2 years ago, that subsidy of $16.6 million meant $47,000 for each student athlete that we are supporting on campus. And I'm not saying we shouldn't support student athletes, but we probably need to have that conversation that President McFadden was talking about what our priorities and values should be. And what is a, I would say a natural, right? A reasonable and natural point at which EKU should fall in terms of its athletics program relative to the overall operation of this institution. It costs the average student who pays tuition here, wherever they get their money from, or it costs, you know, the federal government through Pell Grants, whatever, over $1,000 just to subsidize the athletic program. And then last year, or rather this year's budget was up to $23 million, around $4 million. The numbers are similar, but they've gone up slightly in terms of the relative subsidies. We're now at 7.45% of our combined state and tuition revenue.
Does that subsidy represent an annual subsidy or a?
This is annual, yes. This year we spent or we devoted $23.2 million to sports. We raked in $4.1 million from all sources. So the subsidy rate, which is about 78% at EKU. So that's what the university gives to the athletics program to help it operate. It makes 22% on its own, put it that way.
So just for the pop of the report, we're talking about a $216,000 subsidy for a four-year student athlete. That 54,000 of
yes.
Wow.
Correct. 54,000 is what we approximately pay for each of our student athletes.
Yes.
Yes. And now that translates into $1,188.
Yeah, some of them might.
I told you some of these numbers might surprise you. You know,
real quick point of order. I know there's no like post set time, but historically we've held to 2 hours.
I have a couple more things to share, but
there's more reports after you sign
yeah.
anyway.
Okay.
So is there a motion to extend the meeting by 15 minutes to
give
motion, second discussion? Those not in favor say nay.
Motion passes.
Thank you. So, you know, I will say, as Ray, bless you, mentioned earlier, that we were delighted to have the athletic director and the chief financial athletics chief financial officer join us for a meeting, and it went on almost 2 hours, and they were very forthcoming and candid, and answered pretty much all of our questions. But one of the core questions we had was, well, why has EKU's, you know, athletic spending so far outstripped the average over the past decade? And I'm paraphrasing here, and I hope I'm not misstating, and you can correct me if I, you know, if this needs to be nuanced, but, you know, Athletic Director Motes did basically state that EKU had been in a process of continually ramping up to prepare for the possibility, right, which maybe they were hoping would be the eventuality of moving up in conferences, which we then got into discussing would be even more of a drain upon the university's finances, because it now will cost $5 million as opposed to $5,000. Yes, you heard that right. To move up to the next level. And then you also have threshold costs and required investments and minimum numbers of scholarships and so on. And as part of the meeting, I to give them their due, and to, you know, as full disclosure, you know, it's understandable, right, that if you're going to operate these programs at this level and compete, you actually, you know, you need to provide this stuff, right? The athletic trainers and all the support, et cetera. So I'm not, you know, the point is not to dispute or to, you know, get to that level of detail and pick on what needs to be done for each individual sport, but just to understand the big picture that this is what is required, right? If we're going to continue to operate at this level. And, you know, he basically agreed that we had been ramping up constantly. Now, I was pleased to hear that our athletics budget will be, you know, basically flat rather than increasing. But it may be that it's also possible for us to scale things back to find another sort of still very reasonable and still very healthy, but more suitable, I would argue, level of funding for the program. And, you know, I'm not going to go through all these details. There are some things that the athletic director shared with us about the program, the number of sports teams we have, people employed. You know, one thing I will highlight that's worth pointing out is most of our students, 70% of our students come from out of state, or sorry, student athletes come from out of state. So all those, you know, that's those subsidies are going to them. But when you look at the scholarships, 85% of the scholarships go to out of state or international schools. And I also want to share that, you know, the athletic director did indicate that they had a number of ways in which they had already begun to seek efficiencies and save costs. And we didn't get the details on all of these things, but they're there for your perusal. And, you know, this down here on the bottom left gives you a sense of what, how we would have to amp up our athletics budget even more if we were to take that, you know, long hoped for next step into the football bowl subdivision rather than the championship subdivision. We'd have to spend at least 12 to maybe even 15 or $20 million more a year on athletics to make it happen. So I think that's very unlikely. And that's all we have. Are there any questions? I think it's all Senator.
I'm curious, that money, was that just the subsidies just for the programs? What about NIL money? Where does that go into play?
That's more complicated than I can probably answer. But what I, as far as I understand it, NIL money doesn't really come to the university. It goes to the players. And the university, I think, has some say in how that's dealt with and contracted and managed. And there are booster groups and so on that get involved. But all of those things are, in a sense, off of our official EKU books.
But they use EKU facilities to do this.
Yes.
Yeah. So it's really, it shouldn't be up.
Maybe that's one of the ways in which they'll try to get more revenue by somehow claiming they should have a cut of NIL contracts. I don't know.
Two things. I guess we are seeing that students aren't actually going to events. And so athletics isn't for the students that are here on campus, it seems.
Yes and no. I mean, one can interpret these in a couple of different ways. This, we were told after some discussion, it was confirmed for us that these are unduplicated students. So apparently 2,700 students, you know, go to football games every fall. Now, that's still only, what, 20%, 22% of our student bodies?
At least one game.
They go to at least one game. They check in, they scan in.
We asked, so who's your customer?
Yeah.
You said 30 to 60-year-olds.
So the logic, right, you may or may not recall that when we were more actively under our previous president, and in a sense the previous Board of Regents, we were more actively courting membership in other higher-up conferences. The idea, sort of fiscal logic, was that if we got into more prominent conferences and got more TV time and got into bigger markets and so on, we would then reach our alumni, our well-heeled alumni, who could then start, you know, giving on Giving Day and beyond, right? Well, maybe. I don't really know the lost leader logic of all this, but it hasn't happened yet, that's for sure, because the numbers that I showed you earlier, for example, right, this number here includes foundation fund support. So all that money, yes, they do raise a certain amount of money. I think this past year was $150,000 or something for athletics. But of course, you only get, if you're lucky, maybe 10% of that, maybe only five, right, that you can pour into the program every year. So it's not a lot of actual money that accrues to the operating expenses or to the operating budget.
If you don't mind, what I'm going to do is, this can spark conversation that we can go on. And if you got a whole other meeting, so what I'm going to do is, if it's okay, invite questions, comments, concerns maybe after the meeting, but I want to make sure we give the rest of the committee's time
Absolutely.
And space to present on their report, so that way we can pivot to the organizational meeting, which also has to happen after this. So,
and feel free to send me follow-up questions.
Order. I clicked on the slides and they don't have permission, so can you make them available?
Oh, yes. I think only Ray and I have permission now. I'll do that presently.
Perfect. Thank you. All right. We'll go ahead and move on to election and nominations.
So we had three tasks that we finished up this year. First one, we Senator Sizemore led the charge to come up with a list, Senator replacements for 26 and 20 through 29, plus committee replacements for upcoming vacancies that you can see on the agenda. And then we did recently elect an adjunct faculty senator.
Perfect. Well, thank you for that work. I know we're moving into the end of the year in a little bit better shape than we did last year, so I appreciate that work. It is ongoing because we still have a number of senators that we have to replace, so make sure you're reaching out back to your units and your departments to make sure that those who are rolling off Senate, that we get those seats filled. Pivoting to IT with Senator Gain.
We do have our report uploaded. We sent out a survey, and the preliminary results are in the report if you're interested in it. But we did have to extend the survey because there was a great concern about some of the questions regarding like the rank, the title, department, people worried about security. So we're not going to report that data at all. We were never going to show it in relation to the MFA or monitoring. It was more for information sharing, for access to website, but it was a good concern. So we're just not going to report that at all. And then I will update the final data on that same doc, since it's a Google Doc, at the end of the week. And then we will meet with IT, different people in IT, because it's a huge department and there's a lot of challenges. But I think that's all I have.
Perfect. Thank you. Moving to faculty rights responsibilities with co-chair Senators Ginn and Nakla.
We have yet to submit our report. We've had things going on, but I mean, I think, you know, we've already talked about the ongoing
healthy part
policy
of
policy 1.1. Yeah. And I do think that some of the House Bill 497 is going to fall under the aegis of rights and responsibilities.
Absolutely. All right, going to rules with.
Senator stated something. You want to share
that? No, you're going to make it.
You got to do that. Our report is attached, but basically we just worked on bylaws and helping Sabrina get together all the changes that have been made in like the last 3 or 4 years to make sure that they get published this time around, and coming up with rules for hybrid meetings, which we may not need after this time around, but just in case, they're there now.
Well, thank you for that work. And then last but not least, faculty welfare. Senator Bain, I don't think it's here, so I think it's just...
We have yet to submit our report, but this is the data that we've compiled showing that most faculty are doing more work for the same amount or less pay. But we will be meeting, we actually have a meeting scheduled, as is in our charge, faculty welfare will be meeting with the president and provost privately next Tuesday. So if anybody has any questions that we would like to pose to them in that setting, feel free to reach out.
I have the question of the survey that went out now, what is it, 3 years ago, it's on faculty welfare, that no one ever brought up again?
Right.
Yeah, because yeah, they still haven't given you all the answers?
No.
Okay.
Yeah. So that'll come up, yeah.
Okay.
And I would assume that the faculty workload is going to get compounded by the current change in working conditions, so that'll be interesting.
Yes.
All right, so on closing out, are there any final questions or comments before we adjourn this meeting, take a break, and then pivot to the organizational meeting shortly after? All right, do I hear a motion to adjourn? Senator McGuffin, second. All right. And any discussion? Adjourn.
Thanks, John.
Yeah, well, I'm going to take the chance.